you shut them as we fly. As we fly.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
On three.
Okay.
One, two. Okay, well, that's close enough.
pretty close.
Welcome to Transistor Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Eve Parker Finley.
Cool. Well, okay, I'm so excited to talk to you. For a number of reasons. I feel like I'm so excited about seeing your work, seeing the Sounds Good channel, like, blossom.
Awesome. Thank you.
Because I think it's so, like, I'm also someone who's always kind of been fascinated by YouTube as a medium.
Right.
And, but never, like, felt, never, like, went, actually gave myself permission to create on it, so.
Right.
Seeing you do it was really, really cool. So I just
cool.
wondered
Thank
to,
you.
Wonder if we could start with, like, how did you, what do you do
yeah.
on it, and how did you get into it?
Yeah, great. Well, I have, so I have a YouTube channel called Sounds Good Channel, and it is a music education channel. That is sort of rooted in experimental music a little bit, but I definitely go out into pop music and classical music and who knows, maybe other things, just basically whatever I'm interested in. But it's sort of like underpinning is trying to make a music education like community that is more inclusive and making content that's entertaining and trying to sort of bring people in. And and it's also sort of a response to a lot of the experiences that I've had in being in institutional settings for music education. So trying to respond to the broiness of the electroacoustic world that I come from, and also the kind of snootiness of the classical music world that I also have been engaged in.
Totally.
So yeah, I do like profiles on composers who are really important, made major contributions to the world of music, but are less recognized than I feel they should be based on their identity. So I've done videos on Wendy Carlos, who's a trans woman, and Julius Eastman, who's a black gay man who made minimalist music and whose name is not really brought up in the conversation about minimalism. Very much at all. I only learned about him recently, within the last year or so. But for me, he's just as important as Steve Reich or Philip Glass or any of those people. So that's kind of half the channel. And then the other half is other sort of music composition ideas or stuff about sound. So I have a video discussing the concept of timbre and how it kind of shows what we don't know about psychoacoustics, like the sort of areas that we don't yet understand. And I have another one just came out recently on music notation. So I look at a bunch of different kinds of music notation and sort of try and illustrate the fact that the world of music notation is just as varied as, you know, written language or like written scripts. And that, you know, this idea that our staff notation that we use in Western classical music or whatever is somehow what music notation is. And in fact, there are so many different approaches that sort of reveal different types of musical belief systems and values and stuff. So, yeah, that's the brief overview of what I do on Sounds Good. And you asked how I got into it.
How'd you get into it? Why'd you start doing it?
Yeah.
I mean, you talked about it a little bit, but I'd love to hear more.
Yeah. So, well, it was kind of at the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, I've always been really into YouTube and like learning stuff on YouTube. Like I'm like very, very curious person, and it's a fun way of like stating various interests that I have where I maybe wouldn't necessarily want to, you know, read a whole book about, I don't know, the history of the Byzantine Empire or something, but I would love to watch a half an hour video.
Totally.
So yeah, I've always been into YouTube, and also like this is, so I'm sort of starting way back here with this explanation, but
that's cool.
I also got like a lot of support through sort of these, you know, parasocial or like not real relationships with like trans creators. When I was in the beginning of my transition, I really, really relied heavily on like seeing other people's put their stories and experiences up on YouTube. That really helped with a lot of the isolation that I experienced.
Totally.
So that's the sort of background. But then, I guess I'm sort of at a transitional state in my life where, a lot of, basically I just have a lot more space now to think about things like my career and relationships and stuff like that. And so I sort of, I just finished my undergrad finally. It's been like, it's been like 7 or 8 years that it's taken me to finish it, but I'm done now, which is
electroacoustics.
Thank you very much.
Huge.
Feels great. Yeah. It feels like, I mean, it feels sort of like I just removed like a bunion from my foot or something, more than it feels like a accomplishment, but I should probably give myself more credit. Anyways, I'll try and wrap up this explanation here.
It's okay.
Just giving my whole life history. So, I mean, I've wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be a professional musician since I was like 12 or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I recognize that the way, you know, you need to build an audience in order to do that. Like, the only sustainable way of being a professional musician is by having a lot of people know who you are and know what you do. And that's not how I would choose for it to be, but that is how it is. And that's what that's what I want for myself. So, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was just sort of being like, well, how am I going to start like reaching people? I don't really know where to start with this. And sort of, I saw like a talk with like Brian Eno at the very beginning of the pandemic that really sort of, and Yanis Varoufakis, I think is his name, this like really cool interviewer. And they were just sort of talking about like, how is the world going to change? And how's it going to adapt because of the pandemic? Like, this was like a year ago now. And they were talking about, you know, using the internet as this, you know, tool of communicating through this time or whatever. And I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The internet. So,
the World Wide Web.
The World Wide Web. Yeah, exactly. So that was sort of like the, oh, maybe I should start a YouTube channel. And then, and then like, I think all of the experiences that I've had over the last, you know, 10 or no longer, like 15 years or something, like, you know, basically my, you know, from my adolescence onward, like fell into place. And yeah, everything just sort of fell into place really, really quite quickly in terms of what I wanted to do, at least to the stage of sort of self-understanding that I'm at now. Like, I've only been doing it for 4 months and I'm still absolutely in the process of figuring out exactly what is the range of what I do. But I think, you know, like I was very primed to respond to the types of experiences that I've had. I've been thinking about critically about education, I mean, since I was like a little kid. I think I was probably a very bratty and annoying student to have. Like, I was definitely the kid that like had my hand up in class all the time being like, I don't agree with that point.
I just want to say it.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, you're that girl. I see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I, you know, for my YouTube channel, I definitely try and, you know, soften those aggressive edges. But yeah, so that's basically the story.
Awesome. What was the first video that you uploaded, that you made and uploaded?
It was a video on just intonation. So that's like an alternative tuning system. So the basic story with just intonation is that Well, it's actually the first tuning system that we really used. Like, you know, if you were to say, sort of make this idea of the West, quote unquote, like in Greece, 2,000 years ago, people would have been playing using a just-in-tone tuning system. And then basically, as it developed, it developed over the course of obviously many centuries into equal temperament, which is what we mostly mm-hmm. use now. But there are some sort of advantages from the old system that we left behind that I will not get into the detail of for the sake of brevity, and just go watch the video if you're interested.
Yeah, exactly. Just go watch it.
Because I've said all this already. yeah, so that was... There's some really cool stuff about just intonation that we've sort of lost. And so I've been interested in just intonation for a really long time. So it's definitely kind of a heady first topic, but, you know.
Why not just dive in?
Yeah. Here we are. Here we are 4 months later with a bunch more heady topics.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting to me. Also, because your past is interesting to me. As someone who also, like, grew up very much immersed in this classical music culture, like, I think I started playing violin when I was, like, 4.
Okay,
and,
wow.
And, which is extreme, which basically means I don't remember having memories not knowing how to play it.
Wow.
Which is kind of, like, a trippy thought. It's definitely, like, trippy a part of indeed. Me, but, yeah. But, there's lots of that, I mean, there's lots of interesting parts of like classical music, and there's lots of activities that I did growing up playing classical music that I really like appreciate that I got the opportunity to do, like playing quartets, like playing with people and mm-hmm. learning craft and stuff. But
cool.
There's also so much of that culture that I really that almost made me quit music entirely.
Yeah, totally.
And like the restrictedness of it, like I remember these like competitions we would play.
Yeah.
And they'd be so stressful, but, like, for what?
yeah,
like,
totally.
Just playing to, like, family members and, like, the other people who were also taught by my same teacher. And, like, we weren't allowed to, like, dress up. We, like, we're supposed to dress up, but in this very, like, you know, black and white kind of way.
Yeah.
But what's your past with, like, that culture?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like I just want to say that, you know, to echo what you say, like it's my belief that that type of environment is it's not even not conducive. Like I feel like
mm-hmm.
the story of like I almost quit music because it was so harsh mm-hmm. and made me feel so you know, I mean for myself like inadequate and you know, like I was so weird for not being able mm-hmm. to sort of fit this like very, very traditional mold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think that exactly as you say, like, there are so many things that I've learned from that kind of education that are really, really important to me. And I think that, you know, there's this sort of impulse to like throw the baby out with the bathwater,
mm-hmm.
and I hope that, like, you know, I think I've gone through a phase of really rejecting it and then, you know, circling back around and
totally.
I hope that I can offer some people, you know, like an opportunity to do that too, or like, you know, maybe be like, hey, like, yeah, all that stuff is really kind of. Can really make you feel alienated, but there's also, or that world can really make you feel alienated, but there's actually a lot of really great stuff that you can learn from it. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when I was younger, like, because I've been really, really interested in music since I was about, I don't know, like 12 or something like that. And I just always wanted to learn more about it. And, you know, mm-hmm. I grew up in Saskatchewan, which is in Saskatoon, which is not exactly like, you know, the mecca for weirdo musicians to get to learn about more about music. Like, there's a cool music scene there, but it's, you know, my options for education were basically like the University of Saskatchewan, where mm-hmm. I could take, you know, where it was about like, do you, you know, can you transpose this, you know, melody line mm-hmm. from alto clef into another key on the bass clef or something, you know. It's like
super fun stuff. Yeah,
super fun stuff. I mean, you know, valuable, but like not the reason, not for me the reason to do music, you know.
Right.
So yeah, that I remember taking a test. I don't remember exactly what the context was, because the first year of university that I did was in Saskatoon, and I remember taking a test to get into some class or something, and just feeling like, you know, like looking around and just being like, wow, I just do not belong here mm-hmm. at all. Like, these people don't like me, you know, like I clearly just, yeah. So then there was that. And then, you know, I think there's just like a long process of like searching for like places to learn mm-hmm. about music. And then I kind of discovered, like contemporary classical music when I was about 18 or 19. And then that there was more resources for me to teach myself. So then I was like learning, you know, I was reading about John Cage and Ioannis mm-hmm. Xenakis and Jorge Ligeti and all these composers, you know? And so that was kind of a cool moment for me, but it was all by myself. And then, then I just kind of stumbled across electroacoustics mm-hmm. and was almost kind of reluctantly just like, my parents just wanted me to get a degree. And I was kind of like,
right.
I'm gonna play in my band. like, you know, and this is back when like rent in Montreal was like, you know,
yeah.
under $400 a month for like everyone.
Totally.
If you live with roommates. And they were like, no, we'd really like you to give it a try. And I was kind of like, eh, okay, whatever. And then in the first couple of weeks, I was like, how can I, you know, how can I get my homework done as quickly as possible so that I can go play with my band?
Mm.
And then it didn't take long to be like, actually,
what I want to do.
Like, I love it here. Like, I don't want to shove this aside. Like, I want to do this. But there were lots of things that were hard about it.
Wait, you didn't want to shove which part aside?
I didn't want to, like, when I started, I was kind of like, how can I fit this program into my life sort of in so that I can maximize my other time to do my own music. And then I quickly realized that I actually really, really liked it there.
Cool.
And really that changed. That really was sort of like, oh, okay, there is like a place that I can go where other people can teach me about music and I can feel, at least with the content and the approach, not the social aspects of it were not really okay, but but the way that the people approached education was really, like, I think it was the first time where I was in an environment where the people teaching me were A, like, open-minded to weirder stuff, and B, just, like, really committed to people's learning. Like, it was a small program, and, you know, the teachers were just like, oh, yeah, you want to do that project? That's, like, totally different than what everyone else is doing, but, like, obliquely fits the, you know, the thing, and it's something you're really interested in, like, absolutely go for it, you know, like.
Oh, sweet.
Which was great, because I've always been very self-directed. That's always how I've done everything. It's very hard for me to fit, like, assignments and stuff like that are really hard for me. And I, like, in terms of, like, you know, we have this specific kind of task that we need you to carry out. Like, I'm much better at being like, this is what I want to do, and then I like pour myself into it or whatever. But then, yeah, as I was alluding to earlier, like, you know, yeah, like electroacoustics is mostly guys, like, and sometimes it can be better, and sometimes it can be really not so great. And then, I feel like I mean, you're asking me good questions because I have long, like really long answers to them.
It's great.
Then I sort of came full circle and I was like, well, I had finished most of my electroacoustics classes. And then I was like, what's this counterpoint business that I can do over in the music department? And that was really how, and that sort of coincided with like this, like, I think as I got more comfortable with myself, I also discovered that I really love pop music. And I think that was something that I, really did not let myself enjoy, for a lot of my life. You know, I think especially, you know, how I sort of discovered a place for myself in this world of 20th century classical music, which is obviously extremely avant-garde, and very like forward thinking, in this sense. Like that's really what it values, is like coming up with something new. And so I think I found myself in that space and I was like, that's what's cool. Like, that's what matters. It's like inventing something new and like, who cares if most people don't understand it? Like, and then I sort of, as I got more in touch with myself and, just had more freedom to allow myself to just enjoy things. I really discovered that I really, really love pop music and, and then, you know, so counterpoint is obviously not pop music, but it is like the classes that I took in the music department do really help you understand the formal elements that like make tonal music work, or at least a certain aspect of that. So there was this sort of coincidence of being like, I want to study harmony and counterpoint and composition in the music department, with being like, and I also, you know, really love Frank Ocean and Wasteblood or whatever. And so that was like this kind of coming full circle for me with the classical stuff, where I was like, I loved it. It was really cool. And I learned so much and it totally changed the way that I experience music. And like, especially the counterpoint stuff was just like, absolutely invaluable. Like I feel like it's just opened me up to enjoying writing melodies and like feeling like I have some control over what I do, because I had that extremely in-depth study of being like, okay, like what is the relation, like, you know, the relationship between every note in two or three or four melodies in every dimension, like from one note to the next, and then from each note across the different melodies, right? So it's like really amazing ear training, and it really allowed me to be like, oh, that's why this melody works. Like, that's why this one's interesting and this one's boring to me. You know, I could sort of figure things out.
Wow, you're really making me want to study counterpoint, and that is a sentence I've never said out
loud. Yeah, well, there you go, right? I mean, I feel like I must be onto something good, because that's totally what I'm going for with my channel.
yeah,
totally. That's great. Yeah, I mean, it's very cool to learn, you know, so like learn the idea of like learning the rules, not so you can know how to break them or know how to follow them, but so you can learn why things do what they do.
Totally.
Like, trying to think of a good example. Like, so in counterpoint, it's like considered bad to repeat like a segment of a melody over and over again. So if you go up by step, 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 and then you go back down, you repeat that segment again, that would be like a no-no in counterpoint. And the reason why is because the segmenting the melody creates like its own sort of unit, right? And in counterpoint, the idea is that you have these sort of like flowing melodies that are independent of one another. And so to have that repetition, that internal repetition in a melody in that context, sort of breaks up the texture of what counterpoint is supposed to be. And so that's like, that's a such great information when you're writing a melody, right? Because now you're like, well, I want to add an internal rhythm to my melody here. I'll repeat that section. And, or, oh, this is feeling too segmented in this area. I need to change one note so that it's not too short repeating patterns, one after the other, right? So that to me is just like, I mean, it's as a composer, right? As somebody who writes music, like that is the tools that can help you understand what it is that you do and why it is that the sort of formal things that you do, like the actual structures, the actual melodies and rhythms, give you a certain kind of result that is symbolic and emotive and referential to maybe other things that you like, right? But for me, if you don't understand, well, why is it that this thing sounds like this other kind of music that I like? It's a lot harder to have control over what you're doing. So I think that is why all that really old traditional theory can be such a gift, you know, if it's if you have the opportunity to, you know, not be shamed for in your own music wanting to break the rules or just do what you want to do, you know, if it's presented as information that you can just do what you want with, which that's what it should be, then I think it's a huge win.
it's like learning how to use new kinds of paint.
I suppose
so. Or like new kinds of canvases.
Yeah, yeah. Or like learning about what it is about the canvases that you already use that give you a certain result. Maybe even. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, I should read more music theory.
I find it very cool. I mean, I don't know if that was like a huge digression.
No, not at all.
I don't know like what the listenership is, how many music theory nerds there are. I guess there's probably quite a few.
Definitely. I mean, you know, we're on the radio. It's just blasting out for anyone to tune into.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. Let's switch gears a little bit.
Why don't we? Feeling self-conscious.
Back to YouTube.
Let's go back to YouTube.
Again, it's a thing that I've just been thinking a lot about, and I don't know if people... I'm really curious to hear your experience about it, because I don't know if a lot of people... Like, people who don't... I don't want this to sound snobby, but, like, people who don't try and make, like... good content for YouTube. I don't know if people understand how much work goes into it and how much how many different aspects of things you have to learn in order for the final thing to come across as like smooth and professional. And like when I did my first YouTube video, I spent so much time learning about like lighting, learning about sound recording, learning how to like do like fancy video editing, these are still things that I'm like still trying to learn, and I find it really fun, but also it's like a lot. So can you talk to me about your experience with all that stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. People in general have no idea. Like Well, it's basically like what I do is basically a full-time job. Like,
totally.
yeah, I mean, for starters, I mean, this is very me. I like to be prepared. So I started the project really in earnest in maybe June, and I took some time off amidst that whole process, but it basically took, I would say, like 3 months of solid research to produce my first video.
Totally.
Like, I was, as you say, like taking all these online courses on lighting, on video editing, on script writing, on talking to a camera. The list really goes on. And Yeah, I, you know, like my perfectionism didn't really let me like start off slow. Like I was just sort of like, okay, I've got to do this right. And
yeah, so perfectionism plus YouTuber is a deadly combo. It's yeah. quite a combination.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's, but I will say that it has been actually very good for me because, right. The sort of demand of having something out on a regular basis has been really good at forcing me to readjust my perfectionism and be like, okay, is it good enough? Okay. Yeah, I guess it's good enough. Does it make me uncomfortable? Like, it doesn't matter if it's good enough, on to the next thing. 'Cause there's no time.
Totally.
It's hard, but I think that's been a great learning experience for me. But yeah, I basically, I mean, each video takes about a little over 2 weeks of full time of like it takes around 80 hours of work. I would say each video, and they're about 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, there's no set changes. There's no costumes. There's no, like I sit in my living room and film myself talking to the camera. yeah, like it's research, script writing. I mean, basically it's like, it's kind of like writing a feature length article, you know, researching and writing a feature length article every 2 weeks. And then,
but also
making
like
it
designing,
into a production.
Exactly. Designing a website for it. Like,
yeah.
I feel like there's so many other aspects than, cause you know, there's also like the promotion part of it. You know, you have a logo, you have a certain like text that you use on everything. Like
absolutely.
All these things are also part of it. Like it's also such a marketing experience too.
Absolutely.
Or whatever you want to call
no,
it.
No, I totally, I mean, yeah, that's it. That is what it is. Even though that's, you know, it's like sort of uncomfortable to use that language or whatever in a certain way. Like that is exactly what it is. Like, all that stuff has gotten, like, I mean, so that's sort of the work that happened before I started making the videos. Like now all that stuff is kind of, it's mostly, you know, taken care of, I would say, but so much thought and consideration went into all of these different kinds of things. I mean, even the music. I make the music for the videos.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so...
that part, too.
You know, it's sort of like, okay, I want to have enough... I want to repeat the, like, different tracks frequently enough that it feels familiar, but then I want to add in a new one every couple of videos or so it doesn't get... so it evolves, you know? And then, yeah, I mean, I work really, really hard to promote my videos. I just released a video. I mean, not the day that you're hearing this, but the day that we're recording this. And I spent the whole morning writing emails, posting on social media, responding to comments. And, you know, the next couple of days will just be sort of maintenancing that, you know, making sure that there's no, like, you know, I have to like delete transphobic comments. You know, it's like there's this whole
does that happen to you on YouTube?
Well, I started covering trans musicians and then it started to happen.
People,
so I never said that I was trans until I released a video on Wendy Carlos, and my attitude is just sort of like, well, I don't, you know, I know that some people don't know that I'm trans until I tell them, and other people maybe know, and I don't know. I just try not to really worry about what other people are thinking too much, try not to have expectations. But, you know, so the first time that I said that I was and sort of related my own experience to talking about Wendy Carlos was, you know, a scary and intense moment for me. And I was really like, I don't know whether people are going to be mean to me. And weirdly enough, they're not. Like, the transphobic comments that I get on the videos are about Wendy.
Interesting.
Which, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. It sucks. Like, it makes me feel sad.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I mean, it's a weird thing because you all of a sudden you have responsibility over this like digital space, and
yeah,
there's all kinds of people out there. And, you know, I know that at the stage I'm at in my life, like to have somebody say like, you know, some garden variety transphobia mm-hmm. doesn't really rattle me too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't, like, I'm not saying I don't care. It doesn't affect me, but it's not like, you know, I'm just like, oh, right, another transphobic comment. That's so annoying. I delete it.
Totally.
And maybe it sticks in my memory a little bit, and then basically I forget about it. But, you know, if that had happened to me 4 years ago, I would have been very upset.
Totally.
And there are people who watch my videos who are in that stage mm-hmm. of their life, or in a situation where those types of things feel much more threatening and upsetting. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's hard to have, like, you know, to an extent I feel responsible, like I try not to feel too responsible, because you have to, I mean, this is a whole other discussion, right? You have to have really, really strong boundaries. Mm-hmm. It's been a real exercise in like being like, okay, there's like, you know, people messaging me, asking me for stuff. And I'm getting better at just like not responding, or like just when I can't, you know. And it's not that I really, you know, I really, really appreciate, when people, you know, send me these like really thoughtful, you know, invested messages and stuff like that. But I can't give everyone back what they're, you know, the same thing that they're sort of putting into. Anyways, whatever, that's a whole other discussion.
But I also think it's super interesting. I mean, you know, like, I also feel, as a very online person, have experienced a lot of these things as well. And I remember when I first started experimenting with live streaming on TikTok, like, which is such a chaotic world to exist in, like, because, like, the whole platform is built around, like, introducing strangers to you. So,
yeah, right.
You know, as a trans woman on the internet, like, that means transphobia. It just is what it means all absolutely. The time. And I had to get so good at, like, at dealing with it in those live stream rooms. Oof. And, you know, it's hard because I, like, it doesn't, like, I feel very similarly to you that I feel confident enough that it usually doesn't bother me that much.
Mm-hmm.
And I can very easily, like, you know, block people with one hand while I'm talking.
Sure.
It's a skill. but
yeah.
But I
that's
do worry
a real
about,
thing, though.
Yeah, I do worry about the other, the, like, there's lots of young people who follow me, and it's, you know, it's a tough balance between, like, you know, wanting, you know, welcoming those people and, like, wanting people to have a place to see other just, like, people doing mm-hmm. things. Because that's mm-hmm. that was so important to me.
Totally.
Before I transitioned and during. And, you know, they didn't have to be celebrities. Just, like, seeing actual people just, like, talking and doing whatever.
Totally.
But at the same time, you know, I can't be responsible for everything that happens on the internet. It's such a wild place. So
totally, it is really quite wild indeed.
Especially as, you know, like, we are I assume you are as well, like, we are solo enterprises, like,
yeah,
like
that's a whole other discussion. Yeah,
I understand why people who have these, like, gigantic, you know, followings and channels have to have people help them moderate it, because
absolutely.
It just becomes too big of a thing. But
yeah, it's definitely, I mean, if I'm lucky enough to have my channel to continue to grow in the way that it has, it will definitely be very early on in the priorities of, like, work that I mm-hmm. outsource.
Totally.
Because it is, like, I mean, I think the one thing is just, I sometimes feel like I have to go look to make sure that mm-hmm. there's nothing there, and then that's, like, that's not, like, I, you know, I need to be able to, like, leave the online world when I'm not on it, you know? And
yeah,
I feel like that worries me, you know, that I'm starting to feel like, oh, shit, like, I gotta go make sure.
As
they're getting viewed more, there's more.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Sorry.
But, oh, no, I mean, that was basically the thing. it's getting worse. The amount of comments. It's weird, you know, like I think you start and you're so excited and you're just like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, you want it to grow. And of course that is still what I want. And I'm very grateful for the, whatever has happened so far. Like, you lose things along the way, I think. And like, I think it felt like this very safe little space at the very beginning. And now, you know, the you can start to see there are more tumbleweeds in this wild west.
Yeah. I mean, it's like throwing a party and then you're so happy when your friends and family show up. And then you're excited that they brought, like, cool acquaintances that you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. But then all of a sudden it starts to get big enough that you don't know everyone there. And it, like, it then gets a little sketchy.
yeah, exactly. It starts to get out of control. Yeah. It's weird. It's very learning curve. Very learning all this new stuff all the time.
Exactly. You know? Another aspect of the invisible work that people don't know goes into it all.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself, honestly.
Speaking of invisible work / wait. Okay, no. The segue I was going to say, it doesn't work as well as I thought. So.
Okay.
Can we talk about Patreon?
Sure, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Because you were one of the first people that I saw also doing Patreon, and I was like, oh, that really also spurred me to create my own. So cool. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
But what's your philosophy towards Patreon, because I think this is a super interesting thing that a lot of people don't talk about, but I think is really interesting and relevant.
Well, I'd like to hear also what you think about it. I mean, for me, it feels not too complicated. I feel like I put full-time labor into this project, and my hope, like any small business owner, is that I can get a living wage from full-time work. That's basically it. That's kind of my goal. I want to do other things too. I don't want to just be like a full-time YouTuber, but I, you know, I'm basically a gig worker. And I just want to get paid for my work.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts? How do you feel about it?
I mean, by the time I launched my Patreon, I had worked through a lot of, challenges over like the past couple of years, mostly in regards to actually being a musician and like feeling like that was a valid, like, career choice, and that I should be able to do that in a way that makes me a living, and reconciling like how to approach it kind of as a small business, even though, you know, it's also an artistic thing.
Yeah.
But I just got to this point where I was like, you know, something that really excites me about Patreon, even I remember hearing about it when it first launched like years ago, like, I love the idea that it can be this way to like build your own thing between you and the people that get something out of what you create.
Absolutely.
Period.
Yeah, totally. And there's a very special element of it, for sure.
Yeah, and it just, I feel like it has it has this potential to like, to make a bunch of the other like structures that you might have to pursue in order to make a living in this world like less powerful, and that makes me really excited. At the same time, I had this back and forth in my head about what do I think about this concept of like creating a hierarchy amongst the people who are supporters of me, or like who consume the stuff that I create. And I was a little uncomfortable with the idea of like creating this another like stream of content that was behind a paywall.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why, I mean, for me, I set it up as like, hey, everyone, like, I'm not going to be posting that much stuff in this
yeah.
page.
Yeah.
I wanted to set it up as like, if you have the means to support me, then support it so that everyone else can also enjoy it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I do think there's, I think there's also something so valid about being like,
I want to get paid.
I want to get paid, and also, like, artists deserve to, like, have say over who gets access to them.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
And I do think there's something to be said about, you know, art should be accessible and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, I get to choose who I'm accessible to.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And in what ways.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, it feels like, yeah, a bunch of really good and interesting points. I think this is reminding me of this series on YouTube called, it's two videos by this channel called, I think it's like Strucci Movies, like Strucci Movies, I think that's what it's called, and it's called Fake Friends. and it's all about this sort of thing about like sort of selling a sort of perceived closeness to you, which is absolutely a part of what you're doing with Patreon. What one does with Patreon, what I do with Patreon, like, you know, so for me, there's very little content. I just have a bit of behind the scenes content on there for the sort of higher paying folks. But, everything, like all of the actual content that I make is basically all on YouTube. So what I offer people is like, you can see the video come out a few days before it comes out on YouTube, and you get your name in the credits and these sorts of things. It's like, you know, like a business. It's something that I'm always thinking about and always like wondering how I can improve. I've got like some new features coming soon. Cool. But you know, even just so like when I post a new video on my Patreon page, I have a little blurb about this is how I felt about making it. And, you know, for the one that I released today, I had to film three times because I tried some new stuff and it didn't work. And right. So any of my regular viewers on YouTube have no idea. But on my Patreon page, it's like, you know, hey guys, like, I tried these things out and it didn't work, but like, also like, thank you for, you know, sort of helping me feel confident enough to try these things and then right. have the patience to be like, that didn't work and I'm gonna do it again because that wasn't good enough. You know, and like, it's not that anything that I said was a lie. It wasn't. All those things are true. But I still don't know any of those people. Like,
yeah.
I don't know many of their first names. I've never seen their faces before. And there is this sort of implicit thing of like you get the behind the scenes. You get to hear what my thoughts and feelings are. You get to sort of get quote unquote closer to this person. And in my content, I talk, you know, I speak directly to the camera. I share my own personal anecdotes from my own life, and I present a curated version of myself, you know? And people are getting savvier and savvier on the internet these days, and in general, I think it's just what you have to do. Like, you know, the thing is that we're in the business of views and likes and comments. And if you want to get paid for the things that you put your, like, heart and soul into, then you have to kind of play that game. And it's not perfect. And, you know, like, I fully admit to engaging with all of these less than ideal. Well, but the thing is that I think that It's only really problematic if people aren't able to understand what it is.
Totally, like, if they're being tricked.
And
Or like...
But the thing is that, like, I mean, I'm like, it's kind of on them to know whether they're being tricked or not. Like,
yeah,
it's like, the thing is that the curve of internet literacy is, there's always going to be people who are further ahead and further behind on that curve, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. and there are going to be people who are more vulnerable, who are more susceptible to being like, this person is actually my friend. And, right. and that's unfortunately a fact of life. Like, there will always be people who are susceptible to getting tricked by that thing or whatever. Whereas for, you know, the vast majority of people, it's just, it makes the content more entertaining. It is more engaging. It's more fun. And
it also makes people feel like they're a part of it, you know. Absolutely. it turns it less into this like I create, you consume,
yeah,
into
totally.
This like you are actually now part of the reason that I'm able to do what I do,
right?
And that's how I've been thinking about it a lot, is right. like it is sort of building a community of support. It Absolutely. Makes it kind of more two-way.
Totally.
Yeah,
I think that's also true. Yeah, especially with, I guess I was speaking to just more like being on the internet and making content on the internet in mm-hmm. general. But I absolutely agree that it is really cool, because the thing, like, I guess, yeah, to maybe sort of like tie a bow on that statement, like, I think the point is that it can be really nice if you know what's going on, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's like, I don't know. It's like, you feel like you're hanging out with a person and that feels nice. And then mm-hmm. if you're able to be like, okay, that was nice. The video's over. I'm going back into my life and that person is in some other city from me doing whatever they're doing, just as any other stranger is, then it's fine, you know? But
yeah,
it's just that not everyone can do that, you know, which is where I think it gets a little sticky. But no industry is perfect. Like, I'm just like, there's always going to be weird mm-hmm. things, like, so I don't know, that's just, it's part of the game.
Totally. Well, we have to pick this conversation up another time, I think,
yeah.
cuz there's so much left
totally.
In here. But
totally.
As a wrap up, like, we've a few more minutes left,
mm-hmm.
like a handful of minutes left. And I would love to bring it back to, if people want to find out, to see your stuff or to support you, how do they do that?
Great. Yeah, so, I mean, everything that I do is on my website, sarah-feldman.com. I also make music, so you can see some of the stuff I do there, and I will be involved in some other projects too, so that's kind of where you can see everything that I do. But my channel is just youtube.com/soundsgoodchannel. And then my Patreon is patreon.com/soundsgoodchannel.
Nice.
And so those are the people who basically allow me to continue doing what I do. And then I'm on the internet basically everywhere, Twitter and Instagram and stuff. Sounds Good Channel, can find me there too if you want to see my selfies.
We love a good selfie. Also, I meant to say that Sounds Good is such a great name.
Thank you.
I think it's so perfect. I wondered, like, did you have difficulty with, like, getting, because it's such a good name that it must be the name for other things too.
For other stuff. It is the name for other, there are other channels called Sounds Good. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's always the thing, right? Like I have to now compete against the other Sounds Goods, which there are no really significant active ones on YouTube, but there are some other ones that come up. Yeah, it's a little bit pernicious, I think. Everyone talks about it. Or like, I get people now set, my friends will be like, Sounds Good TM. over text or something. Or yeah, I feel like I got a text from my friend recently being like, every time I say sounds good, I think of you, and I'm like, oh my god,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice for sure, but it makes me feel, I don't say it anymore, I'll just say that much. I say right. sounds it's... great now. So I'm not allowed to okay. say it anymore. Yeah.
Well, if people really want a sounds good, you know, more in their lives, they could also get your merch, right? You
have
t-shirts?
That is absolutely true. Yeah, I have a
I'm
big
looking at them right now. They're so pretty.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I have an amazing designer who also did the design for, like, the graphic design from my channel. That's, like, the one sort of thing that I've had some help with. So she made, like, the background cards and all the little graphic elements and stuff. And I arranged them all, but she sort of gave me the elements to work with. Nice. Her name is Sam Garitano, and she designed the t-shirts as well. And she's a super talented Montreal graphic designer. So, yeah, yes. I have a. You can go to my Big Cartel if you want a t-shirt, and I will have tote bags coming very soon also.
Ooh, yeah. I want one of those. Sweet. Yeah. Awesome. So, well, thanks so much for talking with me today. This has been super interesting and great.
Thank
sounds,
you so
it's,
much.
It's definitely sounded great. Sounded good. Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll follow you around like a disease. Yeah, well, yeah, thank you so much. I feel like you've asked me so many great questions, and yeah, it's been fun.
Cool.
So. Great.
Thank you so much. That was Transistor Radio, my interview with Sarah Feldman about the Sounds Good channel. Make sure you check it out on YouTube and everywhere. Thanks so much for listening. Please stick around on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is community radio. We love community radio. If you want to follow me and my stuff, you can find me on Instagram or TikTok or Apple Music, Spotify, etc., etc. Basically everywhere under Eve Parker Finley. This is my song, Blocks and Passes. Have a great day. Bye.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll.
Just can't resist, no matter where I'm going, I will never switch or sell my soul to